Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast today. My name is Billy Dees, and I'm here today for HO Press, Shorehouse Books, Corner Office Books, and HumorOutcast.com. That is the place to take a humor break. If you haven't had a chance yet, do check out that website, HumorOutcast.com. New content pretty much every day and always something to check out. On the phone with me today, I have Concha Alborg, and I hope I got your name right there.
Yes, you did.
All right, Concha Alborg. Now, she is the author of a book, My Mother, That Stranger, Letters from the Spanish Civil War. Let's kind of start with you, Concha. Would you describe kind of where you are from and what brought you to the United States?
Well, I was born in Valencia, which is the third largest city in Spain. And I grew up in Madrid, which, as you know, is the capital of the country. My father was an academic and a writer. And he was teaching in Spain successfully and writing. He won several awards very early in his career. But then he came to the United States with a Fulbright program. And at first he was going to come alone with my mother, and my brother and I were going to stay in Madrid, which we were very happy about.
Uh-huh.
But they changed their plans at the last minute, and the family of four came to this country together. And he taught first at the University of Washington in Seattle, and that is where I finished my last year of high school.
Oh, okay.
So all of a sudden, I had an American high school, and I started college at Purdue University in Indiana. And all of a sudden, I was, you know, with my education going in this country, it just seemed like the perfect decision to stay in this country, and I did.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. Now, would you describe your childhood in any certain way? I guess I'm not sure there is a normal, but I mean, did you do normal childhood things, or were you kind of the student type right from the very beginning?
No, I wouldn't say that I was the student type from the beginning, but what I think my childhood was dominated by, although I didn't realize it at the time, was the political situation in Spain.
Yeah.
Because Franco had been in power since 1939 at the end of the Spanish Civil War. And because my father had fought against Franco, had to be very careful at home and outside the home as to how we had behaved ourselves and what we did. And so it was definitely a repressed situation, which I'm sure that's one of the reasons that my father wanted to come to the United States, and
sure,
the Fulbright opened that door.
Sure.
But growing up, I was just, we were a very close-knit family, and we still are. I go to Spain regularly to see my relatives in Valencia and in Madrid. And I grew up in a household with a very, very attractive mother, which comes out in the book, My Mother, That Stranger, and almost famous but well-known father, and then an older brother. So I sort of was like a late bloomer, and I was observing all this and taking it all in, but I was not a protagonist as a child.
Okay. Did you have any particular aspirations when you were young to be a certain profession or something?
I was a great reader,
okay,
and I did that under my father's tutelage. And I loved reading, and I would be allowed to read this and that author, and I was very proud of my accomplishments in
sure
that way. But I wasn't really thinking about being a writer or an academic at the time, although when I finished my undergrad, it just seemed so natural to go on for my master's and then my PhD and become a professor myself,
right,
because I had grown in that academic atmosphere.
Sure.
But I can't say that it was a planned idea that I had as a young woman. It was more as a way of life that I was used to.
Sure. Now, you've spent a lot of time in academia, and you were a professor. What areas did you specialize in?
I taught for 28 years at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, and I taught mostly Spanish literature and Spanish culture and film as well, Spanish film. And it was a very satisfying career at St. Joseph's because I started at a time when there were very few women at the school. St. Joseph's had been traditionally a men's university, well, college first and then university. When I taught there, so I was able to do different programs. For example, I started the program in study abroad in Madrid. I was instrumental in planning the gender studies program. I was the associate dean also. So I had a career that became very meaningful at St. Joseph's, and I was very proud of those years there. And my two daughters were there as undergrad students. So St. Joseph's turned out to be just really a perfect fit for my academic career.
That is fantastic. Very, you're interesting. You've had an interesting journey, that is for sure. Your book now, it's called My Mother, That Stranger, Letters from the Spanish Civil War. It is described as creative nonfiction. Could you kind of talk about what that is and what drew you to that genre?
Well, when I was teaching, I started publishing fiction. I wrote two collections of short stories and a novel. And I was very interested in continuing my creative career, which was hard to do with teaching and getting tenure and promotion and all the activities that I've already mentioned. So I took an early retirement program, a tenure buyout at the university, so that I could write full time.
Yeah.
And I found myself changing from fiction to creative nonfiction, which is the genre like the memoir or travel literature would be creative nonfiction as well. Essays would be and also creative nonfiction. It's
okay.
any narrative that is not fiction, but it's creative in the sense that it's not like a journal article or an academic article.
Okay. This book is a memoir about your mother based on letters that she wrote to her fiancé, who was fighting against Franco's forces during the Spanish Civil War. Correct me if I'm wrong, the Spanish Civil War was from about 1936 to 1939. And I kind of want you to briefly describe the war, only because most people who are familiar with that with history in general, let's say, and you talk about the late 1930s, the attention seems to go to Nazi Germany. For obvious reasons. So I don't know that a lot of people are really aware of what was going on in Spain during that time. So I was just kind of wondering, can you kind of briefly describe the scope of the Spanish Civil War and what it was about?
Well, I'd be happy to. But actually, I find that the American reader knows a lot about Spain in the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Nazi Germany because Spain, the Civil War, which you're absolutely right, it was between 1936 and 1939, was really a dress rehearsal for World War II in that the same forces were divided in action. So Italy and Germany with Spain, although Spain stayed neutral during World War II because the country was basically destroyed after the Spanish Civil War, but with Franco at its head, they were the fascists fighting the more liberal forces like France and the United States, and in case of Spain, the Spanish Republic. So the Spanish Republic, even though the term is sort of contradictory to the way we see Republican in this country as being conservative. Right. In Spain was a very liberal time.
Okay.
So my mother grew up under the Spanish Republic. And this was a time when women had the vote, when divorce existed, when it was just a very liberal government, one of the most liberals at the time.
Okay.
And it had conflict with the military and the church in Spain. And with Franco's rebellion in 1936, the civil war started.
Okay.
My father, who was not a military person at all, he was already a young academic. He didn't have his PhD in hand, but he was already at the university. He found himself fighting against Franco. The country was divided during the Spanish Civil War geographically. Even though people might have felt differently about the Republic or Franco's forces,
okay,
the different regions stayed faithful to different ideologies. For example, Madrid and Valencia, where my family is from, they fought against Franco. So did the area of Barcelona. But the north in Castile stayed faithful to Franco and the military and the church. So the country was divided in such a way,
wow,
that it was possible, and it happened, that siblings or family and relatives could be fighting in different parts of the war and be fighting against each other only,
yeah,
because of where they lived. So it was a very bloody, time. It is suggested, because the numbers are not completely clear, that 1 million people died, and that includes the people that died in concentration camps in southern France after the war, and also the number of people that were exiled was huge. And my father and my family were count in that number, because,
yeah,
my father was really ready to leave Spain because of his political ideology. So it was really like a prelude of World War II. And the United States had the Lincoln Brigade fighting against Franco in Spain.
Okay.
So that's how I find that there is a connection with the United States in the Civil War. And I find so many times that people in this country are definitely in tune, and they know very much about the Spanish Civil War. I'll give you an example. Last week, I went to NYU for a documentary on exactly this topic, the exiles that came to this country when Franco took power. And they have a complete series of documentaries at NYU to commemorate, this is the 80th year since the Civil War finished.
That had to have been a pivotal time for Spain, because obviously 1 million people, and who knows how many people displaced. It obviously changed the course of history for Spain. So that's it's something that to be honest with you, I'm getting acquainted with in the process of getting ready for this interview. I had no idea how large it really was.
Really was, and it decimated the young men, the population, because the men were either put in jail if they had fought against Franco and if they had survived the war, and not counting the many people that have died. As a child, since you asked me about,
sure,
my childhood in Spain, I remember very clearly the many men that were in either a wheelchair or with,
sure,
crutches, missing a limb, or and they were everywhere. They had official jobs sometimes, but sometimes you could tell that they were economically very challenged. And you, that was part of the way we live. You could see them everywhere. The people,
yeah,
that have the consequences, the physical consequences after the war.
Oh, sure. Well, that would have been a significant percentage of the population. So that's it's really interesting to learn different parts about history, for me anyway. So I really appreciate this part of the story. Now, in forming this book, you found letters, okay? And there was about 800 of them. And apparently no one knew that these letters existed in regard to your mother, and they were hidden in an attic. So my question would be, how did you finally run across them?
Well, we had my father's centenary of his birth was in 2014. He was born in 1914. And because of he had become a well-known writer and a scholar, we were organizing with the University of Malaga in Spain a symposium to commemorate the centenary of his birth. And he had two homes at the time, the one in Bloomington, Indiana, where he had taught and where he had retired, and a home in Spain outside Madrid in a town called El Escorial. That was where my parents' summer home was.
Okay.
And in 2013, his books had been cataloged and had been picked up, and all the documents were filed. All these people had gone through the house here in Indiana and the house in Spain. Everything was ready to be taken to this university where all the documents and my father's books are held. And here I live in this country, but, you know, obviously I was part of the symposium and I was interested to see how this was going. And I went to his summer house with two other people, two other scholars. And, you know, the place was like I described. And then at some point, the doorman came up to the apartment and he said, because he's the one that let all these people in, and he announced that, remember, there is an attic up there and here's the key. And I remember that attic. That's where I house, you know, my children's cribs and toys when they were little.
Sure.
And we went up to the attic and there were three boxes there that had not been touched. And in one of them, my father's class notes, I had no idea my father had saved his class notes, were in a box. And then underneath the class notes, obviously hidden, were 822 letters between my parents. And here I am, a writer, living in the States, you know, which is far from my parents' home, but I was the one to find him. It was like fortuitous. It was just an amazing. The people from the university wanted to keep the letters, but I argue with success that this was really a personal document that I wanted to bring him to Philadelphia with me, which they allowed me to do, although they will eventually go to my father's collection. But they are still in my power, and I just, from that moment on, I have been focused on this and learning and reviewing about the Civil War myself, and so that I could understand and I could, you know, do justice to this project and to this find.
Now, the title, My Mother, That Stranger, Letters from the Spanish Civil War, that would lead me to believe that in the process of going through these letters and reading these letters and kind of going on a little journey back in time, as it were, as you're reading through these letters, that you kind of found another side of your mother that you may not have known or was readily obvious when you knew her as an adult. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That is what happened. And that is related to the political situation that we have already mentioned, because the mother that I knew was sort of like me, quiet person. Definitely, we mind our P's and Q's, and my father ran the household and in the sense of, you know, the voice of the family.
Sure.
And we were basically, I see it clearly now, repressed. So then I read these letters, and first of all, the letters are extremely interesting as a document in themselves, because usually when you find this kind of letters, it's very typical, by the way, to find them in an attic and things like this.
Yeah.
But usually you have one set of letters. Usually you have either the person receiving the letters or the person writing.
Right.
It is very seldom that you have the complete set like I do.
Yes.
And they are in perfect condition, and they're at 80 years old and they're in perfect condition, and also that I have the complete set. There is not a single letter missing. So all that creates already, really for me, a responsibility. What am I going to do with this? But then the stranger comes in when I read the letters and I say, but who is this woman? I don't know her. First of all, in the letters, my mother was working for the government, for the Republican government in a co-op. And she is the oldest of seven. She's working full time, but in the morning she has to go and get food, which was very difficult with coupons. The fact that she worked in a co-op helped somewhat to get food for all these people and bring it home before going to the office. In the evening, she stands in line to get water because everything was, you know, restricted and very hard to get to feed this large family. And then not only that, she's giving blood regularly in the hospitals to the victims of the war. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, but how come she never told us this? I had never heard any of these stories. In her letters, not that my father's letters are not interesting, they are, but they are very literary and very sophisticated. But my mother's letters are this struggle. There's more about the war in my mother's letters than in my father's, and he was at the front lines. So I'm reading this and I'm saying, who is this? And now I understand. She was a Republican woman. She had grown up under the Republican that I describe as being such a liberal time in Spain. And she was completely repressed. Once she's married and starts her own family, she must have been very worried that her past would come out when she was working for the Republican government. And she was completely different than the young women that is in the letters. And that's why I came up with that title, because it was really a journey of discovery.
Sure. As you started to get this different image of your mother, did you talk to family and friends, and maybe some that were older than you that knew her during this time? Did they have any insights into the person that she was?
Well, unfortunately, the people from her generation and the seven siblings have passed away, because I found the letters in 2013.
Okay.
So it was, so from her generation, I used to talk about my mother to them because she died young. She died in 1975, the same year as Franco, by the way.
Oh, okay.
And so we did talk about her, just reminiscing about her, but not about the war. No one knew about the letters. And it was, I did learn about my mother through my relatives, but with regards to this book, it was really to my generation, to my cousins in Madrid and Valencia that I went to, and I said, you know what? I just read this. Have you heard this story? And some of them had, and they didn't. They did. We exchanged photographs that they had that I didn't. I was reading today, preparing for this interview, my acknowledgement page in the book, and I see that I mentioned in particular three of my cousins, two in my mother's side and one in my father's side, that have been extremely helpful to, you know, we do WhatsApp and we call each other and say, oh my goodness, you won't believe what I just read. And they actually reading, they were telling me that they're reading the book in Kindle, which I'm thinking, oh my God, it's in English. And, you know, they know English well, some of them do. And then they're reading it in Kindle. And I'm thinking, you know, it is a marvel of modernity.
Yeah.
How we communicate with each other.
Yes, it is. It really is. What would be the biggest challenge using personal letters, let's say, to form the framework of a book?
Well, it was overwhelming, actually, because every time I read the letters, you cannot go pick and be reading a few and jump from. You have to read them from top to bottom, and of course,
sure.
I have. And every time I said, oh, I have to read them one more time, it was a huge commitment, because even if, you know, there are 800 letters, so even if I write, you know, if I read, you know, maybe 10 letters, 15 letters a day, it would be a month before I could read, if I did only that full time, the complete set. So it was a big commitment, and it was really a feeling that it was really almost overwhelming. What can I do justice to this project?
Sure.
And what happened was that I was being overshadowed too by the notoriety of my father, and I felt the book had to be about him. And it was only when I decided, oh, wait a minute, you know, people are writing about him in the university where all his books are kept.
Yeah.
It is my job to write about my mother.
Yeah.
And when that decision was made, I felt free.
Yeah.
It was like, who else is going to write about her? It would need to be me. And
sure.
Then all of a sudden, it was just, and I only came to terms with that in the beginning of 2018. So it took me a while, and it always does with my books. I need to let things simmer. And this had waited so long, this letters, that, you know, 3 or 4 more years with, you know, were nothing compared to the letters. And I took my time, and then once that my mother appeared as the protagonist, it became, it was just a very exciting moment and project for
sure.
me. Now, the difficulty as a writer, and I think that's what your question was suggesting, is what do you do? How do you organize? You know, by
exactly.
then it was 400 letters, her letters, not all 800, both of them.
Right.
And I decided to divide the book by themes instead of chronological.
Oh.
Because chronological, it felt almost like, you know, like a burden again. Read the letters in order, you know. That was not working for me. So I had a narrative arc that begins with the discovery of the letters, like we mentioned, and then I did topics. Obviously, I had to do the war, because I already mentioned that she had so descriptive what was going on during the war in Valencia. And that was one of the topics. And then I did, for example, the sayings, the popular sayings, because in the letters they used all these sayings. Some of them were familiar to me, and some of them were so new and interesting. Tried to find an equivalent in English was a big challenge. And then the terms of endearment that they use for each other.
Oh.
Because of my, you know, academic upbringing, this was something I had studied and taught my students. And then that was another one of the topics in the book. And so then the book was done by themes, and I think that makes it almost like you can read each chapter separately, and it has its own, you know, story to it.
Do you revisit the letters? Just let's say... kind of, if you miss your mother, or is it something that you you do for personal reasons, or is it, have you, at this point, have you backed away from the letters?
No, I'm not away from the letters. The letters now are in my fingers. It's a very weird, because now they're separate into different files, and I can go to them, and I know almost exactly where this and that episode is, and it's very easy to find. No, I'm definitely not ready to give them up yet.
Okay.
For example, there was this one expression that my mother used that she called my father, mi niño, which means my child.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, my God, that's so weird for two young people. And my mother, who's younger than my dad, she was only 23, calling my father, who was 26, my child. And, you know, I was just very puzzled by that. And then she describes this photograph of my father, who was an orphan very young, as a child. And I said, wait a minute, I have that photograph in my bedroom, it's framed in my room. And all of a sudden, it was really like another discovery. Well, now I understand why she calls him my child, because he must have told her how he felt as an orphan.
Yeah.
And I had little moments like that, that reading the letters, I would discover things about my family, about myself, that I, you know, I knew, but I wasn't aware of.
Sure.
And that was a beautiful, that has been a really one of the most beautiful projects that I've ever worked on.
Well, that's what was kind of where I was going to place my next question. It sounds to me like you have a story here that certainly is a historical journey, but it's a personal story. And it also speaks to maybe a different era as well. So you have a lot of things going on there.
Absolutely. But at the same time, it really does relate to the present, because in this country, there is this interest in getting our DNA and finding our roots. Many friends that are doing this that I actually send for my DNA too.
Oh, really?
I, I did, because I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm missing something.
Yeah.
There's nothing unusual there. I was sort of a little disappointed.
Oh.
But the idea of finding your family is so real in this country.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I think this is how this book is, it relates to, you know, to the everyday reader in such a way. So because we're all searching who we are, where we come from. This is a nation of immigrants, much more so than Spain was certainly when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So this is one of the reasons that I decided to write it in English, because I thought that it related to, you know, to the to everyday events in this country. And if I may put something political in our interview,
sure.
is with our the sense of nationalisms that are emerging in this country and all over Europe, really all over the world.
Yes.
This is very much like the Spanish Civil War and the nationalism then. So I think the book is really timely in an interesting way.
Absolutely. And that kind of is, I was going to ask you what impact it had on the reader, but it seems to me like you summed it up perfectly. It's like so many things when you read about history, it kind of often relates to some of the things that are happening now. And some things good, some things not so much. And I believe we need to revisit that every so often. This book, I'll let you speak to this, but this book gives you an opportunity for the reader to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that I just got the copies of the book today. It was fortuitous that our interview was today.
Awesome.
Yeah, and they included some comments from readers that read the book when it was in manuscript form. And that is the comments that the readers have made, how the Spanish readers that have, and the comments are in the front of the book, they are saying that it's really a portrait of a time, of a generation. Not just the story of you know, Concha's mother.
Yeah.
And the American readers are saying what we just commented on, that it's still timely to talk about political turmoil and talk about nationalism. So it is interesting that I did not have in mind that I was writing a timely book when I was writing it. But it is interesting how it relates to life and to history and to my own personal journey as a writer and as a daughter. It has many facets to it.
We are talking to Concha Alborg, who is the author, and the book, once again, is titled My Mother, That Stranger, Letters from the Spanish Civil War. Now, it is available on Amazon. Are there other places? You mentioned Kindle. Are there other places people can find the book?
Yes, in my webpage, which is www.conchaalborg.com, there is also the link with the American distributor, because the book was published in England. This is interesting. The reader or the people listening might wonder, well, why published in England? England has always been very interested in the Spanish Civil War. And this publishing house, Sussex Academic Press, has a series only on the Spanish Civil War. And Paul Preston, who is a very important historian on the Spanish Civil War, is the director of this series, and he's the one that picked up my book for publication. So because the book was published in England, then they have an American distributor.
Okay.
And that information is also in the webpage.
Uh-huh.
I think Amazon for the American reader would be the easiest place to find it.
Right. And your website is conchaalborg.com.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is fantastic. If I can say this, this is kind of a personal thing. I've always felt that some of the best authors have lived interesting lives. There's something about living life having a lot of incredible experiences. Sometimes people seek them out. Sometimes those experiences are put upon them. But people who have gone through some of the things that you have gone through have a sense of humanity that a lot of other people don't. And I'm sure that comes across in your book and in the way you've gone through your mother's letters. This seems like a fantastic mix of circumstances for a wonderful book. And I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast yesterday.
Well, you are welcome. And if I may add one more point,
sure,
that we haven't, but it relates to your last comments, and it is that the book is also an immigrant story. I've seen the fact that my family arrived in this country, and then my brother went back to Spain. My mother was back and forth between Spain and the United States, and only my father and I stayed here. It is really an immigrant story. It's one story, but it is, again, reflected in so many other families in this country. We think about immigration, that the whole family comes, or the whole family wants to come to the United States, and it is not so. Families are broken up.
Yeah.
Families divided when the family emigrates. And in my case, was like that. My family, even though we were so close growing up, we never lived together as a family.
Yeah.
Time. So that's another way in which an American reader will relate to this story.
It sounds like an incredible book. I haven't had my hands on it yet, but it sounds absolutely incredible. Once again, the title is My Mother, That Stranger, Letters from the Spanish Civil War. The author, Concha Alborg. Thank you so much, Concha, for talking to us today. It was a great interview.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are very welcome. My name is Billy Dees, and once again, for HO Press, Shorehouse Books, Corner Office Books, and HumorOutcast.com. And we also want to say hi to Donna Cavanaugh, who put all this together. So a little shout out to Donna Cavanaugh from HumorOutcast.com. Thank you to all of you who have listened to our podcast today, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon.